Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
10 to 6 the time, Friday evening on LBC. Tom Swarbrick here means one thing. We go stateside for genuine radio gold as Pat sits down to her steaming dinner. We can all tuck in to Simon Mark's American Week.
Tom, here we go again. America's two presidential candidates will be hunkered down this weekend, preparing for their TV encounter on Tuesday night. One candidate will be poring over the briefing books, rehearsing her zingers, and trying to determine how to goad her challenger into appearing unhinged on national television. The other candidate is pretending not to do any preparation for the debate, when in reality, he's doing loads of it. This will be the first time Kamala Harris and Donald Trump have ever taken each other on in any kind of TV encounter, with the keys to the Oval Office hanging in the balance.
The debate is everything.
Everything.
Veteran pollster Frank Luntz laying it out on CNN earlier this week. After June's TV debate ended Joe Biden's chances of seeking re-election, all eyes will be on an entirely new one-on-one dynamic in the US presidential race. And Luntz, a Republican not working for the Trump campaign, became the latest party supporter publicly to suggest that the debate, like the election, is Donald Trump's to lose.
I'd say to him that silence, in some cases, is the best language. That silence, because he has questions that he can ask that she can't answer. Why did inflation get so high under your administration? What exactly are you going to do? If your policies caused it, what can you do to solve it? And most importantly, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? It's not my question. That was Ronald Reagan's question. If he asked that question plainly, he will be successful. I don't believe he has the ability to do so.
That is such an astonishing thing to say about a presidential candidate that he can't even marshal a cogent argument in 30 seconds or less to demolish his opponent. But in fact, Trump is still struggling to do precisely that.
The Arab nations, and we're very honored to have some of my friends here with us today, but they're working very hard despite being here. Can I not be your president?
The Republican standard bearer took a trip to the Big Apple this week to take questions from the New York Economic Club. It was yet another curiosity. Listen to what happened when he was asked a pretty basic question that required a detailed policy answer.
If you win in November, can you commit to prioritizing legislation to make childcare affordable? And if so, what specific piece of legislation will you advance?
Now, that is not exactly a bouncer. Do you give a monkeys about childcare? And if you do, what are you going to do about it? Answer, there was none.
When you talk about the kind of numbers that I'm talking about, that, because, look, childcare is childcare. It couldn't, you know, there's something, you have to have it. In this country, you have to have it. But when you talk about those numbers compared to the kind of numbers that I'm talking about by taxing foreign nations at levels that they're not used to, but they'll get used to it very quickly.
And on it went, like a Ronnie Corbett Shaggy Dog story, although to be fair to the late Mr. Corbett, his were deliberately funny and got there in the end. Childcare is childcare, said Trump, inferring that he views it as no more budgetarily significant than the ketchup that goes along with a plate of French fries. Never mind that he is struggling to secure the support of women voters in swing state suburbs who actually do very much care about childcare. The week saw a predictable but fresh rejection of Trump by one prominent female Republican.
I have thought deeply about this, and because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I will be voting for Kamala Harris in this election.
The crowd at Duke University in the battleground state of North Carolina lapped it up. But former Congresswoman Liz Cheney was never going to vote for Trump in the first place, and it is not clear how many voters take their cues from her. More damaging to Trump this week was the fallout from his latest entirely unforced error. A visit to Arlington Cemetery in Washington to honor the 13 slain troops killed in a terror attack on Kabul Airport during the Biden administration's entirely botched military withdrawal from Afghanistan. The former president's staff engaged in a physical tussle with a cemetery employee who was trying to enforce rules against using the nation's most sacred shrine as a backdrop for political activity. Trump, accompanied by his own campaign's image makers, was mugging for the cameras in the cemetery's Section 60, reserved for veterans who died in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Well, I don't know what the rules and regulations are. I don't know who did it. And it could have been them. It could have been the parents. It could have been somebody.
It was your campaign's TikTok, though, okay, that put out the video.
I really don't know anything about it. All I do is I stood there and I said, if you'd like to have a picture, we can have a picture. If somebody did it, this was a setup by the people in the administration that, oh, Trump is coming to Arlington. That looks so bad for us.
Utterly disgraceful. It had nothing to do with the families, absolutely nothing to do with the White House. Once again, the former president stands fairly charged with dishonoring veterans of the military. And one of their political action groups, Vote Vets, is taking him to task in a new TV ad.
Disgusting. Donald Trump, the gravemarkers, veterans and military families drop a knee to are not your political props. They represent the heroes we served alongside, men and women you could never measure up to, and why we're doing our damnedest to make sure no service member ever has to salute you as commander-in-chief ever again.
I think they mean business. It is all baffling, because regardless of polls that show Kamala Harris has pulled ahead of Trump in some battleground states, this election is still very finely poised. And Harris, as Frank Luntz suggested earlier, is very vulnerable on the issues pertaining to her own political record and her plans for the future.
My plan will help existing small businesses grow. We will provide low and no interest loans to small businesses that want to expand. And we will, and this is very important, cut the red tape that can make starting and growing a small business more difficult than it needs to be.
The opportunity economy, she calls it, the vice president campaigning there in New Hampshire, pledging to create a regulatory and tax system that will allow 25 million new small businesses to open during her first term in office. It all sounds terrific, but what red tape is she going to cut? Because she won't have the power to alter regulations that America's 50 states themselves impose. And you have to wonder if this is both a great idea and one that is truly attainable, and there are big questions about that, why hasn't the administration in which she now serves already done it? A sentient Republican candidate would find it easy to hold her economic plan up to the light. But instead of that, Republicans are stuck with this.
You've been a man of faith. You go to church. You believe in God. And obviously, God saved your life. He has a purpose for you. Do you think about these things?
Far-right polemicist Mark Levin interviewing, if that's the word I'm looking for, the former president.
Well, I think you believe more because when you speak to experts, like my sons who are shooting experts, but when you speak to experts, they said there was no chance that he could have missed from that distance. I think he was hurried. I think he was rushed because people were starting to say, like, you know, there's a guy up there with a gun.
It would be nice to report that a week that witnessed the first mass shooting of the new school year, a 14-year-old killing two of his teachers and two of his fellow pupils in Georgia, might, along with the former president's own assassination attempt, have hardened his position on the need for gun control. It has not, despite the fact that in that interview we learnt that his two sons are shooting experts. Who knew? For the crucial floating voters in the all-important swing states, it all seems so unrelatable. And relatability, Kamala Harris has in spades.
I have a friend who had a Christmas party, Christmas Eve, every year. And she asked me to make the greens for a party every year.
A devoted amateur chef, here she is in Pennsylvania this week, sharing her lengthy recipe for collard greens.
So how do you make your greens? Do you put turkey in them?
Bacon.
Nice.
So I start with, I slice up my garlic. Uh-huh. But no, first I fry, chop up the bacon.
Fry it.
Then I put garlic, some chili peppers.
Yes.
And then a lot of water and a little chicken stock, and I let it go for a while. So you get that going and all that flavor. And then I put the greens in for a couple hours, Then I do vinegar. And then I cheat and do a little Tabasco.
2 hours, Tom? That's even longer than my mother used to steam broccoli.
With the latest stateside from Washington, D.C., Simon Marks, American Week.